BGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 545, recorded on July 30th, 2019.
Welcome to the 545th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 378th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinser.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonathan Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
Well, not really. No gaming flashback.
No gaming flashback.
You know, here's the gaming flashback I think I'm going to do next week or for the next episode. How about Sonic the Hedgehog 2006?
How about not?
Well, no. It's gaming history. We have to talk about it. I mean, the good games and the bad games.
More like gaming trashback.
How do you decide this? Did it come out 10 years ago this day or something?
No, I just watched a video about what led to Sonic 2006. It's a very interesting story. Microsoft actually had their own people working on their version. I think it was X06, not E3. So what Microsoft had was a far better version of Sonic with all the features that didn't show up in the PlayStation 3 version that was going to be released in Japan. It's just a weird, wacky development cycle. And here's the thing. Sega rushed this because they wanted to make its 15th anniversary. But let me ask you a question. Do you really give a shit about Sonic's 15th anniversary?
No.
I do, because I grew up with Sega.
No, but I mean, the 15th? I mean, maybe the 10th, maybe the 20th, but the 15th? I mean,
oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's like, whatever. It's like me celebrating, oh, guess what? This is the 18th anniversary of, you know, it's like, no. No one cares. I remember they released the one of the Disney things. Was it Disney? It was really snarky, and it said almost the 35th anniversary. Anyways, let's go to what we've been playing. I'll start first. I've been playing Fable Anniversary, which is the Xbox 360 version of an Xbox original game. And I'm going to say this. It hasn't aged well. And I mean that by having played Fable 2 and Fable 3, the first Fable, I realize, is kind of primitive.
A little bit, yeah.
No, there are a lot of things in Fable 2 that I always took for granted. Like, one thing, having to do the renown thing by holding a trophy up and running around, that was so dull and frustrating.
You know? Most of the Fable has been like that, where you just, like, spam certain little gestures. There's no real
depth. Yeah, that's the other thing. It's harder to do gestures in Fable, and there. Fable 2 was a lot more refined, you know, and had a lot of stuff. It took from Fable and just improved it. And I'm not even talking about the dog. Oh, that's one thing about Fable 2. It introduced the dog to every single game that came afterwards. After Fable 2, everybody had to have a dog in their game.
For sure.
I mean, yeah, technically Fallout 1 and 2 had a dog, but it wasn't the same thing. I mean, the dog meat in Fable in Fallout 3 was a lot more like the Fable dog than previous dog meats. Because dog meat in the previous games was just another character you fought with. You know, it was just one of your party. In Fallout 3, the dog became, you know, your companion. Then you had all the dog companions and Call of Duties and the battlefields. Everybody had to have that helper dog. Because as Peter Molyneux said, you will love this dog. When he said that, I knew the dog was going to get shot at the end of Fable 2. They're not going to introduce something like that without taking it away from you.
Yeah.
So I wasn't that heartbroken about my dog getting shot.
I saved it.
Going to get shot.
I brought the dog back at the end.
Really? So you just killed off everybody else and just kept you and your family?
Yeah. Dog is best.
Mm-hmm. Remember, at Fable 2, you had the three endings. The needs of the many, the needs of the needs of the few and the needs of the one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anybody who took the needs of the one.
There's that's definitely one of those ones that, like, after you're done being all altruistic and everything, I'd be like, well, better go explore. I'm bored. Let's go see what that third path is about.
Yeah, all you do is you get a pile of money and everybody is dead.
Yeah, that's not satisfying. But I did enjoy shooting the guy when he was doing his evil overlord speech. That was fun.
I didn't, and Reaver ended up shooting him for me.
That is kind of.
Did you want to shoot him? Did you want him? You know, I'm sorry. I just got bored by his talking.
Yeah, like I really don't like Reaver. I hate him.
Oh, he becomes a magnificent bastard in Fable 3.
Yeah, he does. He's the worst.
Or the best, considering how you view such things.
Yeah.
I said, someone said, there's Karma Houdinis and there's Reaver. Anyways, so that I've been playing that. The next game I'm getting from Gamefly is Dangerous Driving, which I'm really interested in checking out because they're made by the guys who did Beat Burnout, and they brought back a lot of Burnout's old modes. So that's going to be interesting to look at.
I've heard good things about it. Like I've heard it plays like a decent arcade racer.
I really want Blur back. Bring back Blur.
I think my favorite of those games was probably Split Second.
I didn't like it that much. A lot of the explosions are random, and you know, it felt bare bones to me.
I liked the spectacle. It was really over the top and fun like that.
Yeah, but they needed more tracks. I mean, they just had what, like, four of them, and doing them backwards doesn't count.
Sure.
Actually, I don't think they do it backwards. I think they just have those four tracks and that's it. I mean, it's a good concept, and a lot of people forget that Disney made that game. That's a Disney game.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
I mean, it's a good concept, but they never went through it. I mean, if you want another game that's sort of like Split Second, there's Driver of San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
which is basically you're dead and you're in a coma. And as a matter of fact, if you fly all the way up to the edge of the skybox, you can hear the heart monitor. And basically what that game is that you just take over other drivers. You know, you just take over those other drivers. You know, have them crash into the bad guy. Who cares? It's a coma and they're nothing, you know. And it's a really good, you know, it's shot like a television show. So, I mean, Driver of San Francisco comes close.
Mm.
Have you played it?
I have not.
Okay, you should try it out. I think it's on PC.
Sure. If it's available still now, I'd probably give it a go. If it's like Split Second, I really liked Split Second.
Yeah, you should try Driver of San Francisco. It's not quite the same thing, but it does have that television feel to it.
Nice.
So what have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing Dragon's Quest Builders 2. I actually completed it just recently, and it was a lot of fun. And I like that after the story is done, you get a freeform. You can go build now and do whatever you want. You won't be pestered by mobs or story stuff. You can just build to your heart's content, which is nice.
You know there's a season pass for it. There's going to be four DLC packs coming for it.
Yes, I saw that. That does look good. Yeah, you can get like an aquarium DLC, modern DLC, and I, as you said, there's more stuff coming. So that'll be nice to add to that.
But you said there's a new game plus mode or just stuff you can do after the story is over.
Yeah, there's stuff you can do, and like I said, it's a you're on your Isle of Awakening. You have the other islands too that you can go and just build, because before you had this constant monsters bothering you. There'd be this random mob of monsters attacking you every, like, so often, maybe once or twice a day in the time cycle. So that was really disruptive when you're just trying to build. You just want to sit and build. And then, so once you finish the story mode, you can just, like I said, sit and build. They also open up a island where you can build a structure that you share online that other people can see when they go to the Resource Explorer Shore Islands, and your little build will show up there, I think, with your character, and they can recruit you or somebody and it's just really kind of cool to be able to share your works with other people and show them off.
And that just makes me want to think about Minecraft World.
Oh, yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah.
I really do like that share feature in Builders too. It's really fun just like popping on to, like even just like on the loading screens, just seeing what other people are up to.
Oh yeah. And the notification board, I think you can see other stuff too. Mm-hmm. How far have you gotten, TJ?
I've gotten to the second main island.
Okay.
So not too far, but I'm having a really good time and taking my time with it.
Yeah, it is good, and it is nice to take your time. There's a lot of content, and
it's really relaxing. It's just like super chill, and I really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So what else have you been playing, TJ?
I am getting ready to go to Vegas tomorrow for Evo, which is like the biggest fighting game tournament in all of the United States and arguably around the world. So I've been training up on a few of the games that I'm going to be – I'm working press, but I'm also competing this time. BB Tag, of course. Mortal Kombat 11. I've been brushing up on my collector. And then the new Samurai Showdown, I'm also competing in that one, which is – that one has been interesting and fun. Just like it's interesting how old style it is. It's definitely like the old Samurai Showdown that you would play in the arcades where it's more about big hits and just like waiting for those openings than it is about like being fast or sneaky.
You know, they have Mortal Kombat 10 on Game Pass. I might check it out.
Mortal Kombat 10 is okay. I think they took a huge leap forward with Mortal Kombat 11. I'm not saying Mortal Kombat 10 is bad, but I do feel like compared to things like Injustice, Injustice 2, and Mortal Kombat 11, it's kind of the odd one. It's kind of the least good of a set of good games, I think.
Yeah, I'm actually glad I have Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. Because one of the news items is going to be talking about a game that's actually going to be on Game Pass for PC, which I was surprised by and sort of pleased. But yeah, so we're going to move on to the game news since you said. Oh, you know, here's the thing. Are you going to be playing? Oh, damn! What's the name of that Arc System Works game that you constantly harp about for Evo?
Would that be BB Tag or Blaze Blue Cross Tag?
Yeah, Blaze Blue.
Yes, and that's going to be the one that I'm trying my hardest in. I don't know how far I'll make it, but I really am going to see. Like, if I start my day on Friday at 10 o'clock with Samurai Showdown, and then I go into my pools on Mortal Kombat 11. If I lose at those games, I won't feel so bad, and in fact, it'll probably feel good to just, like, get the loss out of my system, get a feel for it, and just, like, be ready for, like, keeping my composure later when I really care about – which is going to be BB Tag.
With either game, have you ever had the feeling like, oh, yeah, this person's up another level from me? Sort of like, yeah, I thought I was good, but...
Absolutely. There's been times where I, like, came up against a player that I felt like I was better than and held my own against them and lost. And that's kind of a bitter feeling. But, like, there are times where, like, there's just players that overwhelm you and, like, you don't, like, they... have a pattern that is just complete and utter like onslaught, hard to figure out on the go, hard to figure out in the seconds before it like can take you out. And so yeah, when you come up against those players, it's not so much a feeling of bitterness so much as it's like, I don't know, like watching
it, sort of follow them just to see how any other people play them. Just like, is this gonna work on everybody or is it just me?
That is actually something that happened when I did a Texas Showdown, as I came up against – I didn't play against this player again in a tournament, but I came up against a player that was like clearly very, very, very good. And we played some rounds and eventually we ended up following each other on Twitter because like I like to see his combo videos and I learned –
It's like, did you want to go follow his matches on during that competition? Like, oh, shit. How do you deal with that?
Yes, I did. I did watch his matches after the fact, just to see how. Because like you learn stuff, you learn how other people handle their characters, and you learn things that you might not have seen from like when you're in the moment, when you have the controller in your hand. It's a very different feeling from when you're standing up just like arms crossed, watching over their backs, watching them play. You have the time to sort of dissect what they're doing and see and think it out in your mind of like, how would I handle that if I came up against that again?
Now, is Blaze Blue as exacting as something like Street Fighter, you know, where they actually count the pixels?
Yes. There's definite like Blaze Blue is not only exacting, it's super fast. And so you have to be like very, very, very almost twitchy in your reactions to various things. And so sometimes it's really hard to overcome a pattern that's like too fast for you to defend against or just like turn around and counter.
Are you going to have to interview people who kick your ass? It's like, well, I'm done with this. So look, I have to interview you now.
The only thing I want to do after somebody has kicked my ass is go grab myself a drink, shake it off, and be better next time. Usually I'll talk to people. I'll chat up folks that have beaten.
Is it part of your job to interview these people? Or you're not interviewing, you're just covering the results?
I'm covering the results, and I have some interviews with developers out there. I'm actually going to be talking to NetherRealm Studios about their new DLC for Mortal Kombat 11. That's in addition to a few other things I have going on, but like I do talk to players sometimes. I do chat them up and I do find out stories. Not necessarily, I don't like to insert myself into stories because that feels indulgent. So I sort of keep the competition and I keep my press work a little bit separated.
By the way, this doesn't let you do anything, but I'm looking at the Game Pass games that are coming out, and one of the ones that really surprised me is Slay the Spire is coming out on Game Pass.
Oh, yeah?
On PC. That was a minor surprise.
That's a good game. I played that on Steam, actually, so that's a really entertaining game. You know, you do card battles to it's kind of interesting how they combine fighting and card cards to... To defeat, and you climb the spire and you do little path choices. So that's really interesting.
That's neat. I really do like that. I've been playing Tepin a lot, which is kind of like that. I like the active system where it's like turn based is fun. I like Hearthstone a little bit. I've played my share of Yu-Gi-Oh back in the day, but. But I do like sort of a more active system.
Yeah. The board game adaptation of Pandemic is also coming, which excites me because I'm a huge Pandemic fan. I had it on iOS. So it's good to be able to earn some achievements for playing Pandemic this time around.
Did you see that Settlers of Catan came to Switch?
I think – yeah, well, Settlers of Catan comes to everything.
Yeah. I was surprised. I guess I didn't realize that it came to every single thing out there.
Oh, yeah. It came out like a month ago.
A lot of games are coming to Switch. It's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we're going to be discussing that in some of the news items, including, you know, but here's the problem with the Switch. We'll talk about that as well. But, yeah, I mean, Settlers of Catan is on everything. You know, the definitive game version was Catan because the Klaus Tauber, who made Settlers of Catan, helped work on the AI, and I think that AI from that Xbox Live Arcade version is now in all the other Settlers. So, you know, so now you have kick-ass AI and all the versions of Catan. But I'm really excited about Pandemic. I don't know. Here's the only problem is I don't know what expansions will come with it, and probably none. But, you know, even the iOS version only had one expansion, and it just added a couple of the classes. So... Yeah. I mean, Space Hulk Tactics is coming to Xbox Game PC as well. I haven't played that yet either. It's a nice strategy game, obviously set in the Warhammer 40,000 universe.
I do love me some Warhammer.
What about Downwell?
So.
Okay. Well, anyway, yeah, I know. Sort of like saying, oh, well, look. Thomas was Alone is coming, yay! Well, I'm not gonna shit talk Thomas was Alone. It's basically a walking simulator, except also a puzzle platformer at the same time. Talk about a game that's all story. That's Thomas was Alone. Anyway, we're gonna go into the game news, XCOM spiritual successor Phoenix Point is delayed until December from PC Gamer. You know, when I first read that, I thought, whoa, Project Phoenix is coming early, I guess. Remember that disaster, Project Phoenix? It's still scheduled for 2020. It also had that little controversy that the guy who was running the Kickstarter for Project Phoenix used some of the money to develop a different game. Come on, Scott. I know you remember this. You were
XCOM?
Aghast at Project Phoenix.
Oh, is that what this – oh, okay.
No, not this game. But I'm just saying about it. When I saw the title, I thought it was Project Phoenix. You know, that game, the Kickstarter game that's been delayed until 2020.
Yeah.
Anyway, Phoenix Point is a turn-based tactical combat game headed up by the original XCOM creator Julian Gallup. It's been delayed again. It's been set to come out on September 3rd, which was a considerable pushback from its originally expected launch in 2018. But the studio announced today that things are shaping up well, but they're not shaping up quite as quickly as they expected. They say, we know this is not our first delay. We are very sorry to the fans. We know we were highly anticipating getting their hands on Phoenix Point. No one is more disappointed than we are, but we collectively agree that we'd rather miss a launch date than ship something that does not meet our exacting standards. We want the Phoenix Point you play to be one of your favorite games of all time, and that means we need a little bit more time. Phoenix Point is now scheduled for release in December, although a specific date hasn't been set yet. The bright spot for backers, since this was also a Kickstarter-backed game, is that the September 3 will see the release of Backer Build 5, which will give crowdfunding backers and early access purchasers and access to the much more robust version of the game. Because they released an alpha. Snapshot announced in June that Phoenix Point will be an Epic Game Store exclusive for 1 year, but said in June when the September release date was revealed that it'll also be included with Xbox Game Pass for PC, which is why I was sort of surprised that it's already going to come. It's a new game that's coming to Xbox Game Pass, which is kind of sweet, you know. It doesn't really matter because I have an Epic Game Store Press Pass, so everything that comes out on Epic Game Store I also own. But, you know, I like the fact that people will be able to play it on their Xbox Game Pass for PC. So, TJ, are you excited for Phoenix Point?
Absolutely. And you know what? Take your time. That's one that I hope that it's as complete as possible, because like I'm gonna play the crap out of that when it comes out. And I'm glad it comes out in December. Like
well, it's a slow period.
Yes, usually. I'll have some time to play it after the holiday break, and I'm really excited for that.
You know, here's the thing. All the Xbox clones that have come out, and there have been a metric fuck ton of those, they haven't really been all that good and really never captured XCOM. You know, the only XCOM that captured XCOM was Sid Meier's XCOM.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, Julian, the guy knows what he's doing. He made the series. So,
what was the name of that that Western version of XCOM? I think it was Hard. No. Remember, it also had poker hands that you did. Hard Quest.
I don't know that one.
You don't know it?
No, I don't.
Hard West. Yeah, it was Hard West. It was released like 4 years ago.
I had never seen this one.
It got good reviews. It's on Steam for $20. I mean, if you like Westerns and you want some XCOM action, check it out. I mean, it's not perfect, but it does have its own flavor, and it has quite a devoted cult fan base.
That's interesting, yeah.
So if you want XCOM except in the Old West without aliens, check out Hard West.
Yeah, as far as like Phoenix Point goes, like I hope that guy takes all the time he needs. So I mean, like, we've waited this how long until it's been a while since XCOM 2 came out. So what's a little bit more time?
XCOM came out in 2017.
Yeah.
Have you played XCOM, Scott?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Do you know XCOM at least?
Yes, I do. I know about it. I know.
Actually, XCOM 2 came out in 2016. The expansion came out in 2017. And here's the thing. XCOM 2, the base game, not very good. It needs War of the Chosen to add spice to it. You know, I really didn't feel like XCOM 2 felt complete until War of the Chosen was added.
Then I thought it was fun.
Then I mean, you needed a long war, too, for XCOM 2, you know, for it to feel it. Here's the thing. XCOM 2 War of the Chosen allows you to increase the timers on missions and when you're hidden. So you can actually do a lot more of the strategy. Because XCOM, the base XCOM 2, it's sort of like, yeah, you're covered, but guess what? Boom, 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 you got to get out of cover. It's almost like it was useless, you know? Now it feels more strategy when it slows down.
I liked the mood that it set. The whole, like, you're on the losing side this time, you have to play from the bottom. I liked that whole setup.
And Yahtzee actually commented this, and I felt this as well. Are people that stupid that they would listen to the aliens? I mean the thin men are no longer even disguising themselves. Now they're just freaking snakes.
I'm going to go ahead and I'm just going to answer simply yes. Yes, they are. They are that stupid.
No, not even. No, not with that guy, the dork with the sunglasses. Who would believe him?
I mean, have you seen our president?
Yeah, this guy was even less trustworthy.
Wow, that's saying something.
It's on console. If you want to try it on console, Scott.
Yeah.
I liked it. I liked it
too, but I just prefer the expansion. The expansion.
And that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying the expansion wasn't good. I'm saying I like the base game, and I think the expansion was a great add-on to it.
Yeah, I just I hate the assassin. The only reason why I hate her is because she doesn't trigger Overwatch. That just annoys the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
The other two are pieces of cake, at least because they do they do trigger Overwatch.
Yeah.
What does that mean to trigger Overwatch?
So what happens is you can have your people on Overwatch, which means if an enemy moves, they'll fire at it.
Okay.
Basically, when you put a person in a position and then you put them on Overwatch, any enemy that moves across the board through their line of sight will trigger them to open fire on that person.
Okay, yeah, I can see that now.
The other thing I liked about the expansion is it allowed you to get multiples on the same tier, so you were no longer restricted to one or the other. You could take them to the training center, so you didn't have to choose. Like, you have long watch or you have pistol, pistol proficiency. With this, you can choose one, and then with the training room, use XCOM points to purchase the other, so you have both of them. I have to choose between column A and column B when you can have both.
I do like that, yes.
I mean, you have to spend points that you earn, so it's not, like, free, But on certain characters, like your sniper, if you put your sniper on automatically fire your gun when, automatic fire gun, automatic pistol overwatch, and being able to do long watch at the same time, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Spouting out a lot of jargon from the game. Just, like I said, the expansion makes the game much, much, much better.
Yeah, it adds a lot of good things to it.
So, the other thing I don't like is that when you are spotted, the aliens know where all of your people are on the map. I just found that silly.
That is obnoxious. But
and if you here's the thing, if I kill all the aliens in one spot, how do the other, I don't want the other aliens to know. It's sort of like I want to go back into cover, back into shadow again. But that would make the game too easy, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Phoenix Point. So, like I said, there were a lot of failed XCOM clones because the original XCOM, as sweet as it is, it had the worst interface. And I'm hoping that Julian took that to heart, because if you ever play XCOM now, 1992's XCOM, you'll be like, oh god, this is a slog.
There are so many stats. There are so many stats. And, like, if you don't pay attention to all of them, your squad will die.
Yeah, your squad will die a lot in the original XCOM. That was the entire point, in fact. Yeah, those chrysalids, they come, they're going to just take you out. Bye.
Uh-huh. They only just move,
the original game were so much more dangerous and annoying than they are in the... I mean, they were annoying in the first XCOM. They're not so much annoying in the second game because those are actually juvenile versions of the original chrysalids. They don't have to build them as big because they have so many other weapons. But in the first game, yeah, they were like, oh, shit. Okay, this mission
is awful. These were, Scott, these were monsters that once they were deployed, they could move halfway, like, halfway they could move halfway across the map in one move. Their attacks would pretty much negate all armor. And if they killed a human, they would turn that human into a zombie, which would eventually become another chrysalid.
Yeah, it would
be a chest burster. Yeah, it does sound like a runaway train. That doesn't sound very well balanced.
They didn't have many hit points, but in the early game, they were like, yeah, there's nothing you could do about it because your weapons were shitty. You know, you had to get good weapons in order to keep, and then when you did have them, you had to make sure that, you know, either your people were wearing the armor that sort of negates that, or you just make sure they kill them straight up. And that's what I like about XCOM 2, because once you get, what's the name of that skill again? You know, there's a skill for the ranger in which if anything comes within melee distance, she's just going to whack them with her sword.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all good with swords. Just whack, 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 you're dead. And chrysalids, yeah, she laughs at them. Every chrysalid that runs up, yeah, you're dead. And then you get Reaper along with that, and then Reaper will just kill everything. So what Reaper does, Scott, is that if your ranger kills somebody with a sword strike, they get to move again and attack again. And what you have them do is you have them attack all the weak enemies. Attack, kill, attack, kill, attack, kill, attack, kill, attack, kill. They can clear out a room all by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And a sufficiently powerful one, I haven't tried it, but I'm going to try it at some point. I'm just going to have them go on a mission solo. Devastate everybody. Phoenix Point, look out for it in December. He ended up talking a lot about the XCOM 2.
The last time he was involved in an XCOM game was XCOM Apocalypse in 1997. Hey, So I have to imagine that he's learned a few things in, over 20 years?
Yeah. You know, that said, I'm still looking forward to Terra from the Deep from Firaxis whenever that's coming out. And it should be coming out because the end of XCOM 2, minor spoiler, they tease the hell out of Terra from the Deep. They don't even make it subtle.
Yeah.
They look at the ocean, there's something coming. Yeah, we get it.
Yeah. The whole gimmick of Terror from the Deep, Scott, is it's XCOM, but underwater.
Creatures are coming from underwater. The creatures from the abyss are out for blood.
Mm-hmm.
And sounds like...
The thing that interests me is that you find out, in both games, in XCOM and XCOM 2, the aliens who are attacking you are downright scared shitless of these guys. And that's the reason why they're taking over humanity. Because they need foot soldiers to fight them. You know,
yes.
During the leader keeps on telling you, you know, we're doing this for a reason. We're not doing it just because we're evil. We're doing this because you don't understand what you're facing.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah, Terror from the Deep. Hopefully it comes soon. And Terror from the Deep, if you thought XCOM, the original first XCOM was hard, Terror from the Deep was even harder. By the way, the most fun about all the XCOM games is the research. That's the most fun part. Especially if you're playing it for the first time and you're learning all the biology of all these creatures.
It must be very satisfying to advance in these technologies and get better weapons and have better tactics for fighting
the
aliens.
In the first game, when you first get the Firestorm, you say, okay, bastards. You got UFOs? We got our own UFO. But that's only in the first game. You don't have that. In the second game, you're so powerless that a UFO will sometimes shoot down your ship, and then you have a base assault. And that's when I discover, you know what? That's why you want those defense towers, because those defense towers, once you spot something, they have almost infinite range.
Hmm.
We're talking a lot about XCOM 2. Let's move on to the next item. go ahead, DJ.
Blizzard thinks it can keep WoW Classic gold farming under control from Game Watcher. WoW Classic is the nostalgia trip that many players have been waiting for. But Blizzard engineers have a myriad of issues to deal with all over again, such as gold farming, which has always had a certain amount of popularity in some circles.
Yeah, I would say so.
When asked whether they expected for WoW Classic gold farming to be a major issue, Brian Birmingham of Blizzard fame said the company is hoping that they're going to be able to keep the problem under control this time around. According to Birmingham, Blizzard is cool with the vast majority of gold farming strategies, provided they include players actually playing the game. If it's normal gameplay that you're getting your gold from, you're good. However, automation is problematic. Really, where we get concerned is when someone has got some kind of automation program doing the gameplay for them, said Birmingham. That's against our terms and service, and we have better detection algorithms and techniques today than we had before. Pardon. With this in mind, Blizzard hopes that they'll be able to curb excessively automated gold farming in WoW Classic better than they had the chance last time around. Whether this sort of optimism is displaced or not, however, remains to be seen.
I remember when I first saw my first gold farming pot. It was just, you know, running around everything and just killing everything in sight. It's like, Hank, how am I supposed to level my character?
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of the World of Warcraft episode of South Park when they were killing boars.
Yeah, that must have been painfully slow. I think after a certain point, I guess they give you 1 XP no matter what, but oh my god, that's just so painfully slow.
It's not the XP, it's, you know, skinning the boars or whatever creatures and then selling it for money.
They were also trying to level up, but level up in a safe area where that guy wasn't going to get them. But, yeah.
You remember, TJ, do you remember the ads that you would see of these services wanting to farm your gold for you?
I do. Like, that was a common pop-up back in the day.
I felt so dirty even just looking at it.
Yeah, that's not something I went into either. I didn't really even know about it that much. Or at least, you know,
The pop-ups that come out now for the people who sell Steam keys.
Yeah.
And that brazen. What's the name of the thing? GA... I forgot the name of the company. You remember this, TJ, that's going on right now? A little controversy, you know, how Valve is trying to combat that.
Are you talking about G2A?
Yeah, G2A, you know, how they sell Steam keys.
Yeah. That's been an issue in a lot of places, and, like, obviously, like, it's not one that you can... Basically, people farm video games like a cryptocurrency, and it's really hard to stop that, because you only need a credit card for, like, a few seconds, buy a whole bunch of games, then you got what you need.
Yeah, you don't even need it. You can just use one of those credit cards, you fill up with cash.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways... By the way, it's breaking news today. I didn't have it in the items, but did you see where the GTA controversy is popping up because they're starting a casino within GTA Online?
Yeah, and it's a casino that you can buy stuff for with real money,
Yeah. Which
is a real problem.
But you can't. Here's the thing: the money you win in the game, you can't reserve that. So it's just majorly. I don't mind having a realistic casino in GTA Online, to tell you the truth. Because, you know, I used to have those Hoyle casino games and all that stuff. But, you know, if you're why do you want to buy fake currency with real currency? Just so you can gamble fake currency and lose it.
Yeah, that is ridiculous.
I mean, everybody gets $500 of virtual currency when they start the game. Oh, whatever. You know, it's just setting off all sorts of alarm bells. You know, having simulated gambling and, you know, I don't know. It's just, it just feels very skeezy, just like G2A.
Right. But, I mean, like, back to the World of Warcraft thing, at least they are right when it comes to one thing. They do have, at least when it comes to, like, in-game systems, they do have a lot of better technology for monitoring patterns. And just like seeing who's doing the same thing over and over again to a degree where it can be determined whether or not it's a bot or if it's actually a player behind it.
Yeah. I'm semi-interested in playing World of Warcraft Classic again. because that was my shit. You know, I don't like the new World of Warcraft. I tried it because it's a free, you know, it's a free. And I hit, once I got to level 10, when I hit level 10, it's like, oh, God, this sucks.
You know? It looks like the same grind.
Here's the thing. In new World of Warcraft, the current World of Warcraft, there is no grind because they want to get you to level 110 as fast as possible. That was the entire point of World of Warcraft Classic. I enjoyed the grind. I enjoyed wandering around, doing stuff, seeing stuff, watching other people play, you know? I remember in Goldshire, you know, all the duels that would have pop up, the duel pop-ups, and I kept on, people wanted to duel me. I said, no, thank you. It's like, there was that chaos that I just enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
I also enjoyed micromanaging my skill tree, damn it. I don't like when other people do my skill tree. I want to do my own skill tree.
I know, and you have to optimize it the way they think you should, you know, otherwise, like, if you're not full-on healer or something and you do others, they don't want you doing that because they're not efficient enough. And it's like, what's the fun in that?
I want my power word shield and my heals and my dot, you know? My dark... Oh, I forgot the name of it. But, you know, it's like dark... It was part of the darks. I want a bit of things because that's how I rolled, you know? I used to like to invade the horde lands and just kill their vendors, then run back into the sea, and they couldn't do anything about it because I had my very powerful Power World shield, and I would just run into deep ocean. Yes, I was that guy. I was that guy. And, hey, guys, if you saw someone doing that to your vendors, that was me.
I was annoying when they killed the quest givers.
And I saw a Tauren guy with another Tauren who was a quest giver. I think it was an escort quest. And I looked at the person who was with me. He said, yeah, we're going to do this. And we just killed the hell out of the guy he was, you know, he was escorting because it was part of the escort quest. And I remember, no, it was an orc. And I remember he said, Gak, G-A-K, which I'm pretty sure if I translated it would have been WTF. And you know what? When you ruin someone's mission like that, that'll get them really pissed. I know I would be pissed. If I'm doing a mission and it's an escort mission, and another player comes and kills the person I'm escorting to complete the mission, you have to go all the way back to the beginning of the friggin' mission just to do it over again. That'll piss everybody off.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess – but here's the thing. Within the context of the game, I was not a griefer. Griefing is when you're doing it when the game – when it's something the game doesn't want you to do. Because if they didn't want me to kill NPCs, they would have made them immortal.
Yeah.
Not to mention it's extremely dangerous to go into Horde territory for Alliance or Alliance if you're Horde, you know, because you have all the guards and all that stuff. You know, and I just went to a town – relative town on the water, and I just killed their vendors. And what was great was I could see from where I was on the shoreline, there was like 50 people just waiting for me to come back. Like, I was a menace. That was a win for me. When people start lining up just waiting for you to come attack them, it's like they have to get the militia out to deal with this one person who's screwing up their town. That's a win.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like a troll to me, but I mean,
trolls are actually Horde.
Well, I know that, but I meant the kind of like just go around causing trouble, you know?
I'm a guerrilla fighter. That's part of the game, man. I came from Dark Age of Camelot, where I was Hibernian, and you know we had to deal with those Alb and Mid scum. Just those three-way battles in Dark Age of Camelot.
I guess it was
based on a game called Darkness Falls, but because that was the name of a cavern in Dark Age of Camelot, in which you know all three it would intermix, and it was basically a PvP zone. So, I mean, like I said, it's something I look forward to doing in WoW Classic. Yes, I want to do it again. I want to be the Bane. I have to get to level 60 just to be able to do it. Well, that's not true. Because here's the thing. In order to do it, you just have to be patient because you just have to swim across a long sea.
Yeah, you just have to be 10 or 20 levels higher than whatever you're menacing, because you can find a little weak hamlet or something and have some quest givers and vendors and just kill the NPCs. And
besides run off. Which, I'm doing it for all the Alliance who have to deal with the Horde saying that the Alliance are wussies.
Yeah.
Who wants to be Alliance? They're a bunch of goody two-shoes. Oh, yeah? Well, this human priest is gonna shove his power word shield up your ass.
So, I assume Classic doesn't have the Vorjin or the Pandas.
No, but what they're gonna be doing is, I believe they're gonna be going year to year to year. I don't know how far up they're gonna do. I would imagine up till Cataclysm and then stop. I mean, before Cataclysm, because that.
You mean up to the place where everything went wrong?
Well,
yeah.
It wasn't Cataclysm, it was the Death Knight one.
No, everybody loved Frozen Throne.
Yeah, that's like the third
one. Not Frozen Throne.
That is the Death Knight one, though.
Frozen Throne.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was Frozen Throne. Everybody loved Frozen Throne, and then they did Cataclysm, which is when they started taking customization options away.
Okay. I remember there were some customization options when I was playing, and then I stopped because I got bored. And then I found out later that they had taken the customizations away. And I was thinking, yeah, I quit at the right time. And I was a beta player, you know. I was there at launch. And the guys at Blizzard know that. When I had a problem, I just went straight to the top.
Yeah.
Anyways. So, yeah, World of Warcraft Classic. I'm looking forward to it. I'm not looking forward to Gold Farmers.
I just get in there and have a good time. Remember, do the nostalgia thing.
I wonder if I do join World of Warcraft Classic, I'll have my old characters. They still have my old characters.
If you log in with your same account, then they should be there.
Maybe eligible for World of Warcraft Classic is the question. I don't care because even if I play World of Warcraft Classic, I probably may want to take a character and level them up to level like level 50 or 60 just to enjoy all the quest stuff, you know, and meet people and do all that stuff. Because when you go to World of Warcraft now, Goldshire is a ghost town.
Mm-hmm.
I also enjoyed being a blood elf too, but it wasn't quite as fun as being a human priest, then a Draenei priest. And I just like being a support class. There are too few support classes. That's the one thing I did not like. I did not like paladins because they take my speciality and run with it. I'm supposed to be the healer and rezzer. Paladins can do all that, yet can also swing a sword. That's not fair.
In World of Warcraft, they kind of focused on the hammer and less the sword, but yeah.
Anyways, we'll move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Let me make sure I'm on the right one. Yeah. Obsidian announces the Outer Worlds for the Nintendo Switch. This is from Eurogamer. That's right. Like so many great games before it, the Outer Worlds will have a home on the Nintendo Switch. Obsidian announced it's working with Virtuos, the developer which helped bring the likes of Dark Souls and L.A. Noire to the Switch to assist with the port of the Outer Worlds. It doesn't have a set release date for Switch just yet, but we do know its launch will be at some point after that of the PS4, Xbox One, and PC versions on 25th of October. And I will definitely be needing a SD card.
I'm pretty sure it's going to be sold on an SD card because they also said, here's the thing, L.A. Noire had to be on an SD card, and you had to have 14 gigabytes on the hard drive, too. So, yeah, it's just... I you know, the Outer Worlds, we don't know what kind of game it's going to be. I mean, everybody's high on it. You know, it's basically Borderlands meets Fallout. But it's going to be – it's Nintendo. If you have a Nintendo Switch 2, at least have like a 200-gigabyte drive because people want to be able to play big games on your machine, you know. And you really – even just 100 gigabytes – you know, because most games are like 36 gigabytes, you know. That's basically what all the games are right now that's on a single DVD, you know, or have downloads. Just get yourself a bigger hard drive.
Yeah. I'm really curious to see what this will look like, when, like the difference between Switch and other systems. Like, I don't feel like the Outer Worlds is the most graphically intensive thing.
It's very stylized.
But I was really I was kind of blown away to see that this was coming to Switch. I think it's cool. I think the more people get to play Obsidian games, the more games Obsidian can make. So, yeah. Yay!
You know what? Who might be behind this? Obsidian releasing on the Switch? Microsoft. Remember, Microsoft wants to put an end to exclusivity, so they want to make sure it is on as many systems as possible.
I mean, because Microsoft owns Obsidian now, right? So
this game, here's the thing. Microsoft doesn't exactly own this game. They, it's sort of like grandfathered to be owned by Obsidian and with a different publisher.
Sure.
But Microsoft probably said, yeah, go ahead.
I mean, Microsoft most certainly has the ability to make the handshakes between Obsidian and Nintendo. So, yes, I think that's a completely viable theory.
And I don't want to seem like a conspiracy theorist, but this is another game that's going to really want to have multiplayer. And Microsoft may say to Nintendo, you know, a lot more people will play The Outer Worlds on the Switch if they had something like Xbox Live on it.
Have they announced any sort of multiplayer for Outer Worlds?
There's other people. I'm pretty sure there's multiplayer in The Outer Worlds because weren't they demoing it at E3 with multiplayer?
Not that I know of. As far as I knew, it was a single-player experience.
It's a single-player game, but you can see where it could be where it could be very easily a multiplayer game.
Sure, I hadn't heard anything about multiplayer for this one yet.
So, Fallout going multiplayer, you know.
I mean, it makes sense because it has a lot of, like, sort of Borderlands vibes to it, maybe. But who knows? It also looks like it has some choice-driven things behind it, and that gets real mucky when you try to do that in a multiplayer game.
Speaking of Nintendo and Microsoft and the Switch, new Super Lucky's Tale arrives on the Switch in November, and this comes to us from Eurogamer. Developer Playful Studios' adorable platformer, Super Lucky Tales, will be donning a cape and marching its way to the Switch on the 8th of November. It's a tongue twister, isn't it? New Super Lucky's Tale expands on 2017's enjoyable PC and Xbox game, Super Lucky's Tale. It's a follow-up to an even smaller moniker, VR adventure Lucky's Tale, also taking its cue from the classic 3D platformers of the 90s. The end is a breezy quest designed around the genre's usual acrobatic challenges, puzzle-solving, and collectible pilfering, in which lovable fox protagonist Lucky goes in on search for the stolen Book of Ages. You know, this item is so full of tongue twisters for me, it's not even funny. Playful promises, quote-unquote, expansive hubs, story-based level adventure levels, 2D side-scrolling challenges, rewarding mini-games, mind-bending puzzles, and thrilling boss battles for the Switch version. New Super Lucky's Tale will be available digitally via Switch's eShop in physical form when it launches in November. And, you know, I know what TJ is thinking. You know, where is Tunic? I remember, you were so poo-pooing Super Lucky's Tale as the inferior Fox game. But guess what? This Fox game is going everywhere. So Lucky owns you, TJ. Lucky owns you.
Tunic can wait because I do not want it to have to compete with Link's Awakening.
That's true.
It will lose.
I saw on Discord there the makers who make this game have a Discord channel, and they said that it's going to probably be slated for 2020, Tunic, since you brought it up.
Lucky's Tale is the best game Rare never played, never made.
I think I would like to play this on the Switch. That definitely looks like a mobile.
Scott, this is a Rare game, not made by Rare.
Right.
If you ever played a Rare game, you'll think, wait, this is not Playful. This is Rare.
It's a collectathon platformer. I mean,
yeah, but just the look and aesthetic is all Rare.
That's yeah, rare. Is Rare the one that made Jack and Daxter?
No, that was it. No. Insomniac.
Then what does Rare make?
Rare made Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Okay.
They made every game on the Nintendo 64. In fact, every game. They made
They also made GoldenEye. They made Perfect Dark. They made
Zelda Ocarina of Time.
They made Donkey Kong Country.
Okay, they specifically made every single Nintendo 64 game that Nintendo didn't explicitly did.
Okay. Nintendo 64 was made by Rare, except for Super Mario World. So, like, they saw Super Mario World and said, hold my beer.
Yeah. So Nintendo made some games, and then Rare made all the rest of the games.
So, like, Turok and, okay.
And then Microsoft bought Rare, and they made games like Viva Pinata.
So they have a pretty extensive library. The great Grant Kirkhope came from Rare, who is one of the best video game music composers out there.
Yeah, the only thing that Rare invented, which I want to murder them for, is how their characters talk. They talk with single noise and just go up and down on the synthesizer.
Yes.
They started off making Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune for the Nintendo.
Yeah.
That's how they got their start. They started with Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune.
So, you know, Super Lucky's Tale, good for it, I guess.
I did not know this. You know, Milton Bradley hired them to make the EA album games for the NES. Stuff like Marble Madness and Jordan vs. Bird and California Games. Well, actually, California Games is Epic's, but still. Yeah. They also did all the Wizards and Warriors games, too.
Rare did? Yes, oh, yeah, Rare that's
did.
Right.
Yes, Rare did.
I love those games.
They made all the game show games. They made Jeopardy, Wheel of Fortune, Hollywood Squares, Jeopardy. They have a long history before they started doing when they went. Here's the thing: they did all this stuff for the NES that was basically like a Nightmare on Elm Street and NARC. You know, I mean, they did all the ports of these arcade games like NARC and Arch Rivals, and you know, but oh god, they also made games for LGN too. They did all the licensed game for LGN like Beetlejuice and A Nightmare on Elm Street and WWF Superstars. But when the Super Nintendo came out, well, first they started with Battletoads, and then they just went on from there. One thing that people don't know about Battletoads is that, you know what the first platform Battletoads came out on?
SNES?
No, the original NES, right?
Nope. Oh.
The first platform it came out on was the Commodore Amiga. And then they made the next console they did it for. They did it for everything. They did it for the Genesis. They did it for the NES. They did it for the SNES. They did it for the Game Boy. All in the same year. But no, the Battletoads first came out on the Commodore Amiga.
I don't remember any of that.
Yeah, Battletoads was their first SNES game that you would say, yes, that's an SNES game. And then they went on from there to do Donkey Kong Country and Killer Instinct. And, you know, and all the rest. I forgot that they were the ones who made Killer Instinct, too.
Yes. Yes, they did.
Of course. It's a fighting game, so TJ knows all about it.
And they actually... I wish they would come out with another Killer Instinct. It's time.
Come out with a Killer Instinct.
No, I mean, like, another new Killer Instinct.
They have the years, you know? Oh, well. So, yeah, I mean, here's the thing. You know, it always seemed like Rare struggled under Microsoft. But, you know, it's funny. You know, when you play the games that they released, like Kameo and Jetpack Refueled and Viva Piñata, it's like they made some really good games. It's sort of like they're only now starting to, you know, people are starting to recognize how good those games are. anyway.
How good the Rare games are?
Yeah, that were released on the Xbox 360.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I didn't like Perfect Dark Zero, but I'm going to give it another chance and see if it was just me. But yeah, I mean, let me ask you a question. Are you excited about the new Battletoads that's coming?
It looks weird.
Yeah, it's cel-shaded.
I know, but like it looks weird in a way that I'm not entirely fond of.
You mean it seems more like a party game than a beat 'em up?
It looks a little cheap to me.
I don't know if it... Well, you know, we'll find out this year, because it's coming out this year.
Yeah, I guess we will. Compared to other stuff that's happening, like Streets of Rage 4 is coming, and Streets of Rage 4 looks, oh my god, good.
Yeah, but they're not making that game.
I know they're not, but I'm saying put the two side by side and be like, what happened, Battletoads? What is this?
Here's the thing. You know what? It seems to me like one of Clay's games. I'm willing to bet you that Battletoads is going to be more like Shank than, you know, old Battletoads.
There was another game that like was shown immediately before Battletoads, and I just found myself thinking like, wow, this looks even worse considering it was just shown before something that looked that much better. It was another indie game that was shown immediately, like right before Battletoads.
Oh wait, not that game in which you have animals go into the light.
Yes.
No. That one. You're heartless.
That game looked gorgeous, and it looked very pretty, and I want to play it.
Oh, okay. I thought you said it looked worse. Oh, I see. You're saying that game was pretty and made Battletoads look worse. Okay.
Yes, I'm saying that like that game being shown and then Battletoads being shown immediately after made Battletoads look bad.
I know. They did the rapid thing. You know, they didn't show any gameplay. They showed snippets of gameplay way too fast to register. I think that's the problem, is where you really didn't get a sense of what Battletoads was going to be.
Spiritfarer.
Yeah.
From the Thunder Lotus people, who also made what was it, Jotun, which is another great game.
You know, speaking of Rare, you know, Sea of Thieves is starting to get stronger again since they started adding a lot of new content.
More bananas.
I really should try it since it's free for me.
Yeah, I mean, like, why not? If they're actually like beefing it up, it's probably
They're making it more personalized. I think, if I remember correctly, you know, getting more of your own ship and all that stuff, you know, and the thing that you really need with a game like Sea of Thieves is just let the players make the game in terms of, you know, emergent gameplay.
Yes.
Have areas of control, you know, where people have to battle to keep control over, you know, like Planetside.
Yeah. Give people the tools and they'll do all sorts of crazy things with them.
Just look at EVE Online. They do a lot of crazy things in that game.
Super Mario Maker 2.
No, I'm thinking about EVE Online. That's the kind of wacky stuff that people will invent for that game. You know, where you can actually lose real life money.
Sure. Yeah.
So anyway, yeah. So getting back to the news. So Super Lucky's Tale. Like I said, you know, for those who haven't been following this long, I mean, DJ was shit talking that game up and down 2 years ago.
I still am.
You have no heart, DJ.
It's going to be fun for somebody, I'm sure.
I played
it's
it. Not... And here's the thing. It was both easy and difficult at the same time.
How long did you play it?
I think like 10 hours, 12 hours. I mean, it was a rental, so I got the idea of what it was all about. You know, mm-hmm. I might play it again. It's just that at a certain point, it just got really, really frustrating. You know, it went from being an easy platform to a, oh yeah, you're try this, asshole, what's it called, sort of platforming. It's old school in that, yeah, you may think it's easy now, but guess what?
Yeah.
We're going to make it rough on you. You know, the really young kids aren't going to get this far, so we're making this part for the adults. And, you know, it's charming as hell. I mean, I'm pretty sure you'll enjoy it, Scott.
I think so, too. It looks like a fun game. My daughter will probably like it, too.
Yeah. Anyway, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me at Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, yo.
Unless your name is Super Lucky, then you have to face DJ's wrath.
Play whatever you want. Everyone can enjoy their own thing.
There you go.
Let me ask you a question. What have you seen anything new about Tunic?
I've seen it show up at various gaming shows. It was at PAX South. It was also at E3 as playable. So it's been making rounds. They just haven't said much new. And like Scott said, they're pushing it back to 2020, which I think is a good idea because you don't want to compete with Link's Awakening. That's going to grab everyone's attention, and you don't want to have your game sitting right next to that for comparison.
Oh, wait, I almost forgot. I played Inside. But I finished it. Yeah, that was a weird ending. It wasn't quite the kind of weird ending I was expecting. It was more like a, wait a minute, what does this have to do with anything sort of part of the game?
That was a very bizarre game. I remember watching the Game Grumps play that, and it was just bizarre. Because nothing is really spoken. There's no text.
Here's the thing. Okay, I'm going to do spoilers now for Inside. So, you know what? If you don't want to hear any spoilers for Inside, you don't want, because it's a really strange game, then just shut the podcast off. I don't know why you become a giant testicle at the end.
Okay. Because it's a big old flesh bag of people arms.
I know, yeah. But you're still testicle. And what the hell does that... Here's the thing. The game is all about you on the run. And I think I know what it's about, maybe.
I think what was revealed was that, if I can remember right...
You remember the episode in which, from Batman Adventures, in which Clayface had that little part of himself... Jump off and become a little girl.
It's something like that, where you're not in control anymore. You've been possessed by.
You're being hunted because you're a piece of that thing that escaped.
Right.
That's the theory. The theory is that you're actually under its control and it's guiding you back to it to set it free.
Yes, exactly. And then it dies on the beach because it wanted to die and they wouldn't let it die.
You know what? I don't think it died. It seemed more to me like it was a seed at that point. Didn't it look like a seed just sitting there?
Maybe.
I'd have to look at it again. It mostly just looked like a bag of arms and legs to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I don't think it was controlling you. I think you were just drawn back to it. But that only begs the question, what the hell were they doing with this thing?
Did you discover the secret ending, Jonah?
No. Okay. I'll look at the video for that.
I was going to say, if you want to explain there's another theory behind that, and I'd actually like to talk to you about it when you find out.
Okay. Guess what? Like I said, it just looks like arms and legs sticking out of a giant testicle.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of it is that it was a different kind of gameplay that they wanted to do, because they kept on introducing new types of gameplay and, you know, puzzles. And having to deal with a fleshy thing that just blobs all around is definitely a new type of gameplay. Especially since you really can't pick up stuff. It's sort of like you have to maneuver stuff. I thought felt quite smart because guess what? You know, I actually was able to, figure out the puzzles without having to look into, into a guide or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like about this game and also Limbo is that the puzzles are extremely organic. It's sort of like, I want to try this. Let's see if it works. Oh, it does. You know?
Yeah, it makes sense. Something that feels intuitive rather than abstract.
Yeah. Anyways, we will see you next week. And sorry you had to listen to talk about fleshy testicle monsters.